You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand just the awesomeness of the work that God does in those contexts. I'm your host, Joe Epley. And I am excited today to be interviewing Pastors Jim and Tina Von Wald. I'm just pumped to dive into their story. These guys are long-term pastors, but they've also done a ton of work, not only through pastoring, but education, community involvement, to really make an impact on the places they've lived and pastored. And so I'm just pumped to dive into their story and grab some lessons from it. But first, I just want to say, Pastors Jim and Tina, how are you guys doing today?
Well, we're really doing good. We're in a snowstorm here in Minnesota, but just want to say thanks so much, Joe, for having us on your podcast. We definitely resonate with the rural message and are passionate about leveraging rural into the kingdom of God. And we just believe there's so much that's still on the table in rural ministry and in the rural context that we just want to do our best to help, to encourage, and to leverage that into the kingdom.
Hi.
Hi, Tina. How you doing? Well, good. Well, glad to have you both on board for this conversation. I think it's really cool when we get to interview a couple because, as we know, it's super cool when we look at one side of the ministry couple and say, wow, look at all the cool things you've done and how God has used you. But it's super fun when you look at both sides of the ministry couple and you're like, wow, look at how God is using both of you to do all sorts of fun things. And so my first question is simple. And again, you guys can answer however you want in whatever order you want. Would you just take a second for our listeners and kind of describe your background in ministry and your connection with the rural church? We're kind of looking for, how'd you get from there to here and what's going on these days, you know?
We started in ministry when we first got married, super young. And then we spent a couple years at my church. Jim was on staff there. I was still in college and Jim decided, nah, I don't want to do this anymore. So we jumped out of ministry and I was fine with that at the time. I was in college and not necessarily wanting to be a pastor's wife anyways. So we spent the next 15 to 20 years doing a corporate work. Jim was a probation officer. I was a trainer, lots of different things. We started our family. And then we decided after a series of that I'm sure will come out in another question, sure. But series of difficulties and whatnot, we got back into ministry and we decided to, or were asked to plant a church in Foley, Minnesota, community of about 2,600 people. And so we moved, planted a church there. It's been 23 years now. Yeah. And it's successful. We've co-led it together. So it's been the second time around in the ministry, I was ready to go. First time I wasn't. So that was sure. Actually a blessing from God. I think as we look back, you know, it's always 2020 that we can see God's hand, but that's kind of where we're at now.
Yeah. I look into my own background a little bit and I grew up rural. I understand the tribe of rural, as Brian Jarrett calls it.
Yes.
That was my background. Tina's a city girl. And so that it was quite a change for us contextually and culturally as a couple to come into a rural setting, really as a second career in ministry. And so our ministry lives have been spent in the plant that happened here 23 years ago. And that truly has been our ministry experience. One church, rural dynamic, rural culture, rural context. And so we feel that God has blessed us with the Holy Spirit giving us ideas about things we knew nothing about at the time. And now on the backside of the journey, recognize God's providence and the things that have happened in our lives in the rural context. And so appreciate that, but also believe that those are things that can be leveraged into other lives as we move forward.
Man, that's awesome. I'm a huge fan of longevity, as a lot of people are. And so to be able to be used by God in one work and to see just long-term community impact is always so refreshing. And again, it's like you said, you look back 2020 and you go, man, look at all the ways that God worked. Well, that's cool. It's lovely to get to know you guys a little better. So I sometimes send these questions and don't really realize where we're diving in. So we're going to start with maybe a rough time in life. Okay. So didn't mean to start here, but here we are. So we'll dive into it. You mentioned that kind of you had a dark time in life. You were mentored by a fellow pastor. And I guess, you know, I just love pulling lessons out of people's life. And when someone has been mentored, they're usually someone who's an advocate for having strong mentors. And so as much as you guys feel comfortable or want to, give us a little bit of context for what that season of life looked like and how mentorship really played a key role in helping you make it through, you know, because I think it could encourage a lot of pastors, you know.
Absolutely. Jumping right into ministry, it was not a good ministry experience. But also I think some of my own spiritual preparation or formation was very works-based versus, you know, God's grace in my life. So I worked really hard. And quite honestly, after about two and a half years of that, I just said, really, this is my life. I'm done with it. And God, I'm done with you. And so ran from God. It, you know, it resulted in also running from marriage, a couple separations. Mm. But during that time, I had a friend who, different than other people in my life, other Christians in my life, was my friend. Got together for coffee and pie and just would talk about life and didn't push. You know, at the time, I didn't want to hear anything about God because I was under the conviction of the Holy Spirit. The last thing I wanted was somebody judging that piece. And so he just spent time with me, probably for about 10 years. We met regularly. And as a result, when the time came for us to really, at really a critical point in our lives with church, he recommended us to attend a church. And he, you know, in my mind, he had earned that right to be able to say that because of his stance in relationship. And so he really, what he did was he mentored me, and you may know him. Roger Stacy is his name. He's now retired, but he mentored me in what it meant to be a friend who was there. Mm. And he just was a friend who was there. So we, when he recommended us to check out a church, I agreed to do that based on the weight of our relationship. And so Tina and I went and checked out a rural church in Princeton, Minnesota. And the couple who was there, Chuck and Carol Pruitt, in time, just took us under their wing. And then they mentored us into what it meant to have a healthy relationship and what it meant to be leaders in the church. And so again, they just were friends. They didn't judge. In fact, I chuckle sometimes at Chuck's response to me when he was looking for a board member who was with leadership. He came to me and asked, and he said, you know, would you be willing to do this? And I told him, I said, you know, the train wreck of my life. Why would you ever ask me to be in leadership? And he said, well, Jim, you're a leader, and I'd love to pour leadership into you if you're willing to allow God to work on your train wreck. And I just agreed to that. And he just poured leadership into me and what it meant to be a good, healthy leader, whether it's in the church or in life, because we just were in life at the time. And we both jumped into the church in leadership. Tina began to be the worship leader in the church. It was a small church in a rural setting that exponentially grew into what would for sure be considered a mega church in a rural community today. And so we were a part of that. And that has, you know, when I reflect back on those two men in my life, they have as catalyst been the difference in where I'm at right now. Their fingerprints are so strongly on our lives as a couple that they continue, their legacy is continuing through what's happening in the church in Foley.
Yeah. Tina, anything to add to that?
I don't think so. I do just want to kind of, well, yeah, obviously then I'm saying something, but
yeah. It's always the classic. I don't have anything to add, but I got something to say.
But let me add it. I just echo the idea that we just did life together with them. Mm-hmm. You know, so much of mentoring, you know, sometimes we put it out here that it needs to be this and this and this. Sometimes it's just being together, playing games. Mm-hmm. We played a ton of games together, laughed. And we just watched them lead as a team and lead successfully and healthfully which we hadn't seen a lot of in the church up to this point. We had been in a lot of unhealthy situations. Mm-hmm. It was just a really great experience.
It's interesting when you reflect back, and as I reflect back now, how messed up our lives were going into a number of different churches that were just as messed up as we were.
Isn't that wild? Yeah.
And so here we were thinking, okay, maybe we'll try this. And then it just was, you know, and so to experience healthy leadership in the church should be the norm, but it's not always the norm. Yeah. So that is that's a huge, as we talk later, that's a huge part of what we do in trying to mentor others or coach others or counsel others is to always to have a leadership component of health involved in whatever it is we're doing.
I love that. And honestly, if our listeners do want to tune back, somewhere buried in our episodes is an episode with Chuck Prode. We actually interviewed him about his church and leadership. And before that, we wrote an article on our website. He's just obviously a dynamite leader and doing incredible things where he's at. So, well, hey, let's dive into kind of community service, right? It's a value of Rural, and it's a value of, I know, that we share as leaders on this conversation today, where it's really a model of saying, hey, we're not just going to pastor a church, we're going to serve our community in different ways, even outside the four walls. And so maybe take turns, because I know the way you guys have chosen to engage your community, even as you pastor together, I know you both have kind of your own flavor, your own context that you find yourself in. So in whichever order you want, again, fill us in on ways that you've seen God work through the ways you've engaged community.
Well, I think we know being in a rural community, the only way we can impact, or not the only way, but a huge way to
pretty
impact.
Pretty close, though. I mean, really.
is to be in the community and to get to know the community. Because Foley, for example, is a very close community, which means if anybody comes in from the outside, you don't get in. You know, they say if you're born there, you graduate, you're a Foleyite. If you move into the community, if you haven't graduated from the school, you're not a Foleyite. No, kids are because they grew up and graduated. But so we've always been the outsiders. So the only way for us to really break in and to not be viewed as the crazy church or the cult was for us to be out there among the community. So some different, Jim did, he can talk about his, but I've been a part of the chamber for many years. It's just a nice outlet for me to kind of have a voice, and I represent New Life Church. So we're the only church on the chamber board. Like next month, we're actually hosting the chamber at our church.
Nice.
And so, you know, it gets them. We talk a lot about in rural ministry about breaking the threshold, getting people across the threshold. Our community is very Catholic. And so the perception of New Life is they're out there. We shouldn't even go close to them, blah, blah, blah. So we try to do as many things as we can to break the threshold. So that's one example with our business leaders is to get them into the building. I was a marketplace chaplain for quite a while, which also gave me let into a corporation that was in Foley. We also started MOPS. That was one of the very first ministries that we started, and it was done ecumenically. And that was a huge impact on moms. I had littles at the time, you know.
And what is MOPS?
MOPS is Mothers of Preschoolers.
Oh, cool.
It's now changed to be Mom Co. or something now, but we just
something trendy. Yeah, I got you.
It was just a really great ministry. And we, like I said, we did it ecumenically. So I had women on my leadership team who were from all the different churches. And we just had, I believe we had an impact on those moms. They weren't, we had very few that attended from New Life, but they were just moms in the community that would come to MOPS and then go out to the bar after and have a good time. So we had them for that little bit of time. And it was a great opportunity for us to share the gospel.
We talk about thresholds. There's two philosophies that we believed in and operated under. One is in order for someone to cross the threshold of your church, you first go to them.
And I love that.
We would go to them. We had crossed the threshold going out and build relationships in different ways in the community. You know, Tina shared some of her. She actually was the president of the chamber for a while. And, you know, I mean, that operated in some higher level roles. I coached in the school. It did some coaching in community education, and it just put me in place with people who were from the community. You know, some of that provided income for the first 6 years in the church. We volunteered in the church. I mean, that was just, you know, and so there's some people that even terminology in the rural community and context, I think sometimes has been warped or missed. Oftentimes the rural church is called the small church instead of the rural church. You know, it's a little bit, well, you're from that small church. And it's a rural church, and the context sometimes might be small, but it's rural first. And you know, that though, that kind of terminology, being co-vocational versus bivocational, you know, co-vocational is that I'm doing the work that I'm doing with the people who are potentially people who may need Jesus and be a part of the community. And it's there that I'm working with people who could come into the church. Versus, you know, that bivocational thought. I was bivocational when I volunteered. I was actually the executive pastor in another community. And so I did that for 6 years. And that was bivocational because those people weren't going to cross the threshold necessarily and where we were at. So, but that, you know, that coaching, we also rented in the school. And that was, the school was a key component to our community. Renting in schools in our community was never done before we did it and before we rented. So God orchestrated something, and it's a long story, but the miracle of it is that by building relationships, we were able to rent in the school at a very low cost because we were a nonprofit. And we did ministry to children and youth, which the school was all about in the community.
Which, of course, yeah, they're going to get behind it.
Yes. For sure. And so in a certain sense, the school was behind us in our rental period. We rented in the school for 10 years. Mm. And that was a lot of years of setup and tear down and all of that sort of thing. But it gave us some exposure as the school had activities or events going on Sunday or Wednesday. That we were there, and it gave us some presence that we might not have, well, we wouldn't have had otherwise. And so, you know, that, you know, it leads up to today, which we continue, even as we've grown and processed, we do something right now when COVID hit, we started a specialty coffee. We have a coffee shop in our church, and we have an awning that, you know, that traditional awning, and we call it our coffee drive-through for teachers, school staff, first responders, medical personnel, law enforcement. And once a month, you know, we give away for free over 100 specialty coffee drinks for people that come through. We regularly, you know, 120 or something was the last one, but one of the things that happens is it gets people to cross the threshold. Mm. Also, we used to go into the school and do that in the teachers' lounges, would be portable that way. But what this does is now that they're on our turf, I feel that I can go to each car and I deliver personally all the drinks. Everybody else is making them and I deliver them. And I ask whoever it is in the car, is there anything I can pray for you about?
Mm. And, I love that.
And they're usually out of that 100, 120, there might be one person that says, no, I'm good. And so usually I give praise with them that everything's good. But all the rest of them ask for prayer. Mm. Many of them are weeping and sobbing as the Holy Spirit sends in the car. The last time that I prayed for somebody, it was a teacher who had lost her husband the month before, a young lady with two children in the car. His children in a car, and she just said, she started to cry, I lost my husband last month. And I just looked at the three of them, and I began to weep with them and carry that burden and just pray for them. And the Holy Spirit was there. And we got done. And she said, you don't know how much this means. Thank you so much. But I was also able to share with her that about three cars before that, somebody had shared her story, and I had prayed with them for her.
Oh,
and
wow.
It just is amazing, you know, when we, and I just think that as pastors, you know, this might be seen derogatory, but we need to make sure our hands are always getting dirty. And that means to people that need the Lord and they need Jesus. But they also just need someone to be there. And so embracing that, I think, has been a huge part of our connection with our community. And we are definitely known as a community church, even in our ministry. We say we have two churches. We just built the children's wing. We have two churches because our Wednesday night church and our Sunday morning church. On Wednesday nights, about 75% of the children and the youth that attend on Wednesday night do not attend, or their families on Sunday morning. So our Sunday morning church has sponsored and underwritten a church for our Wednesday night church, which is primarily children and youth. So that's just recognizable. It's tangible, both in the church body, but also in the community.
Yeah, no, and honestly, what a broad set of examples. And what I love is how accessible all this stuff is. I think that sometimes as pastors, we build high walls and say, well, good for that church for doing X, Y, and Z. But really, I mean, I filled out an application to be on the Chamber of Commerce. It takes like 5 minutes, you know, to say, hey, I'll be part of the chamber, you know, or just trying to go to the school and sitting down for one meeting saying, hey, how can we serve you? Giving coffee with prayer. These are all things that are within the reach of anybody, really, you know, and there's a ton of opportunities that abound otherwise. Man, we could go on and on. I get all excited, you know. So let's go to a different kind of a different topic, and maybe you both can share a little bit on this. But what has it been like co-pastoring, right? Because sometimes people use the word co-pastor and they might say things like, oh, we co-pastor, but really it might just be one spouse predominantly. But it seems like you guys really have tried to walk that line saying, hey, we are a team. We're doing this together. So how has that worked for you as a married couple? How have you found success with this? I think some people I've encountered, some pastors say, I don't know if it's good for my marriage that my wife and I work that close, you know. So sometimes there's that feeling there of like, how's this gonna pan out, you know? And so maybe just share a little bit. How have you guys found this model to stay healthy to have success?
I think I'm gonna start on this one. I'll let Tina kind of chirp in on the second part of it or on her part of it. But you know, we have to navigate into co-pastoring. We office out of our home for 10 years, and eventually we had 5 staff in our home officing there.
Wow.
And Tina and I officed in a bedroom back to back for 10 years.
There wasn't a bed in there or anything.
There was no bed in there.
Yeah, right. Just to be clear. Just to be clear about what's happening. Yeah, we're strengthening marriage, but not in that way.
Yeah. But let's back it.
So we certainly had to navigate through just even communication and that. There were lots of stresses involved in that process of learning to navigate that. But we got to the point, and it probably took us a couple of years, where we got to the point where we began to run in our own lane. And, you know, if you have to a track, we stayed in our own lane, and we learned each other's strengths and weaknesses. And we did our best not to cross over lanes and give each other permission and freedom to operate freely in that lane. You know, it involves a lot of trust in pastoring, you know, because, you know, you think differently about things and respond differently. But we really learned to trust each other to do what was necessary and best in the lane in the way that we would do it. And Tim and I are very different. I mean, we are.
Surprise, you know.
But we did operate as co-pastors. In fact, our bylaws were written with a co-pastor into it. And Tina, you know, was elected as a pastor of the church as I was. And so we navigated into that. We taught our people that co-pastoring can work. And that's something that you build into the culture of the church. And in our community, it's a very, you know, being a rural community, it's very blue collar. You know, I would say that, you know, it's somewhat redneck and proud of it, that kind of mentality, which, is sometimes quite humorous, but, it tends to still have the tinges of chauvinism involved in it, where women are not elevated to the same extent that men are. And co-pastoring showed to our people the importance of a man and a woman operating in their gifts.
I love that.
Don't see the gifts as having a gender attached to them. And so we just operated in our gifts and ran in our gifts. And it wasn't without trial from resistance and those kinds of things. You know, there were times there was lots of pressure put on Tina, probably more than me, not to be in a co-pastor role. Not necessarily by our church, but by the culture and the context we were in. And so we work through those kinds of things. And now I'm just going to jump to now. Tina recently retired from her role as co-pastor. And we're, you know, we're going to talk about a little bit of transition and succession, but we are now navigating as to what it looks like to be me as the lead pastor and Tina as the pastor's wife.
Interesting.
It's not something that we've ever navigated before. And so now we're in the little bit of that same navigating though what those lanes look like. And there's a, you know, there's some adjustments as we look at the fourth season of our life as to God, what do you have for us? And anyway, so.
Yeah, Tina, over to you. What are your thoughts?
This is just like a huge question. You know, we've talked, we've batted around a little bit. We probably need to write a book because we have lots.
I would read it. I'll just tell you right now. Like, I would do it.
It, you know, to put it out there, first and foremost, is that it's not easy. And, you know, I can't, like Jim said, we're trying to navigate now, not necessarily working together 24/7, which is very different because we've been doing it for so long and it feels so right. I'm launching a coaching business and stuff, and I'm trying to do that by myself. And I'm finding that very challenging because I don't have the gifts that he brings to the table with me on a regular basis. So that's been an interesting observation for me as we journey through this next season of life. But, you know, I think there's so many, many things that are important to do when you're co-pastoring. One is, you know, just clarifying your roles. What am I going to do? And what are you going to do? And how is it going to look? You know, Jim mentioned us running in our own lanes, but not only for us to identify those roles, but for our people, our congregation to know those roles, our staff, if we have staff to know those roles, and our deacons to understand what that looks like and how it's defined. So there's not this, you know, we've been fortunate to have staff, and a lot of times it's like, you know, our mom and dad fighting today or whatever. We get some of that stuff in a staff meeting.
That's going to be our next podcast is going to be mom and dad fighting today. I think that'll be a good, like, I want to see the other side of the van.
Yeah. Oh, and they would have plenty of stories. But the whole idea of, you know, we just try to live life in front of everyone. And so with our staff, there'll be plenty of times in a staff meeting where we disagree on a leadership decision or a decision in the way it should go. And so it gets super awkward. But it's been good for us to learn to work through that, but also for us to be able to help our staff to work through it. We've gone back and apologized a million times to them because it shouldn't have been dealt in front of the kids or, you know, however you want to look at it.
Sure.
Some of those things. And then boundaries is another really important piece. You know, co-leading for us in our home, it was detrimental at times to our marriage because we didn't have good boundaries. We didn't know when to stop. Walking up from the basement from the office up to the kitchen, ministry just kind of flowed upstairs. And so, you know, if we look at some things that we could have done differently, definitely we should have been better in the boundary department.
Sure.
We went in for some coaching prior to having a sabbatical. About 15 years in, we took a sabbatical and we wanted to be coached through it. And our coach told us after 5 minutes, he said, well, my assessment of your marriage is that at this point you've been in a 15-year-long staff meeting. He said, that's how I would describe marriage.
Oh, you know? My gosh. And, what a lovely thing to hang on some wall art and put in your home.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's not, you know, inspirational.
there was a side of me that thought in that moment, well, yeah, that's okay because this is my job.
I know. I'm now like analyzing my own mind. I'm like, do I do this to my wife? Because we tend to be pretty involved in each other's leadership, and I'm like, is this? Ooh.
Well, I think the detriment of that is that we found so much fulfillment.
It's hard, right? Yeah.
Doing ministry together, it was so fulfilling. And so then to all of a sudden hear that, it's like, what? We've been.
Yeah,
we've
how could this be a bad thing? Yeah.
But
I love that.
You know, what it does is it certainly created this avenue where Jim and Tina weren't separated in the sense of Jim and Tina as a married couple and Jim and Tina as pastors. And so that, you know, that's unhealthy. That, you know, that piece of the boundary was not something that was good. And so, you know, that was a part of our learning piece as co-pastors too, that we needed to make sure with ourselves, we had good, clear boundaries.
Well, what you have just heard is part one of two of this wonderful interview with Jim and Tina Von Wald. So from all of us at Rural Advancement, I just want to take a second and say thank you for tuning in. It is our pleasure every single week to bring you content that is not just spoken to the Rural Church, but is spoken by people who get it. We hope that you've been encouraged, inspired, and challenged. And most importantly, we hope that you come back next week to check out the second part of this conversation, where we start diving into some of the awesome work that each of these pastors has done with their thesis and the insights that they have learned. For now, I have been your host, Joe Epley. They have been the Von Walds, and we will see you next week.